What if we made it clear to the Sunday morning visitor that Jesus is actually present, forgiving sins? I've written the second part of my essay, Lord's Day, Lord's House, Lord's Supper, and you can read it in the latest Issues Etc. journal. Just click the red subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. The Wittenberg Trail feature details Pastor Eric Rapp's journey from the New Age through Methodist Pietism to Confessional Lutheranism, the free online Issues Etc. journal.
The state of our union is only as strong as the state of our families.
The pro-choice position at its very core is a position of bigotry. When you divide the room or the womb based on subjectively chosen arbitrary standards, you no longer have a commitment to human equality.
In the day of judgment, I don't think that the Lord is going to say, well, you may have celebrated these blasphemous cartoons, but at least you upheld free speech.
Jesus really is the quarterback, not Perry Noble. But Perry Noble, by doing what he's done, not only set up an end run around Jesus, he started playing for the other side.
Confessional Lutheran Deadheads love Issues Etc.
We hear this a lot nowadays. We hear that what the church really needs are dynamic, motivated, charismatic leaders. We need to look around and find guys who have the gift of gab. They can tell a good story, they can tell a good joke, and they're just natural born leaders. We're told again and again and again that this is what the church needs, and that we can't afford to take the time or the money to train these men. That would be nice, but it's a luxury we cannot afford, because think of all the millions, the hundreds of millions of souls that are dying every day for lack of someone to preach to them. Is there an answer to that? Is there a reason why the church has often afforded the luxury of taking a man and spending years with him in a classroom, in a training formation, before they lay hands on him and make him a pastor? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live from the Symposia at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Dr. Larry Rast is going to join us here for the next hour of the program, and you can join us as well. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MY-IE. Send us an email right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc, or our beloved on-demand listeners, you can always use the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about the past, present, and future of pastoral formation, Dr. Larry Rast. He's president and professor of historical theology at Concordia Theological Seminary here in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Larry, welcome back.
Thanks, Todd. It's great to be with you. It's great to sit with you.
I know. It's nice to see you in a tie for a change. The last two times we've had you has been polo shirts, and I think the last time here in Fort Wayne about 7 years ago was hockey jersey or something like that, if I'm not mistaken. And I think you were, I don't think you were president yet, but you weren't dressing like the president back then, that's for sure.
We're changing the president's attire, slowly but surely.
Why has the church historically said that before a man is made a pastor by the church still needs to get a good, hard look at him and then do some forming, some shaping, and some informing?
You don't need to look very far into the New Testament to see Jesus' own concern with teaching his disciples, preparing them for service once he would be crucified, resurrected, and ascended. And then as you move into the second generation of the church and its leaders, the preparation of men to carry on the apostolic service as well. And so the church has always very intentionally set aside a time of formation and training and learning for future inhabitants of the office of the ministry. And the reason for that is very simple. We are those who pass along the faith once delivered to the saints. In order to do that, you need to know what the faith is. Certainly, you have to be a believer, no question about that, but it's one thing to be a believer, it's another thing to be a teacher of believers. And so before a man is prepared to be a teacher and to take on the responsibility of instructing in the scriptures, of preaching the word, of forming disciples, he needs to be formed fully himself.
That doesn't necessarily always mean 4 complete academic years and 90 course hours of classroom work.
137.
137. Well, the standards were so low when I came through. That doesn't always mean a graduate degree, in other words. A very extensive, I must say. You know, the average MDiv, especially at an institution like this, is really doctorate work in terms of the what you're asking men to do in terms of time and work, but they get a master's degree out of it. But why do we do that?
Why do we do that? There are a few reasons that we do that. The church does have a certain flexibility in terms of making the determination about when a man is adequately prepared, academically speaking, for serving in the office of the ministry. It really comes down to when is a man able to teach, St. Paul's words. And to be able to teach simply is not simply having the pedagogical skills to teach. Those are important. But being able to teach, apt to teach, as St. Paul puts it, really is talking about a man who knows the faith, has been shaped by the faith, can communicate the faith, and does that in such a way that the law and gospel are clearly distinguished, that the scriptures are clearly held up as the inerrant word of God, that in our case the Lutheran confessions are known and rightly confessed. And the way you get to that, well, like I said, there's a certain amount of flexibility in that regard. And so, in fact, the Master of Divinity degree, which is the kind of standard degree at this point in time, really doesn't have a long history behind it. It became the de facto degree for people entering ministry in about 1970, 71, 72, somewhere in that range. Previous to that point, there were bachelors of divinities that were offered by seminaries, and in some cases, seminaries didn't even bother to offer a degree. That's not the point in the end. The earning of the degree, it's nice. But in the end, the point is this man able to teach or not?
So we can, at least from time to time in the history of this issue, we can look at men who weren't earning. They may have earned degrees. They might have gone to Princeton and earned a divinity degree, or they might not have. But they were still, nonetheless, being vetted, shaped, formed, and vetted again by the church before being given a pulpit.
Right. And that's us saying, lay hands hastily on no man. Don't do it quickly. Be intentional about this. Be sure about the person that you're putting forward for service in the church. And that takes some time.
Why is it important? And this is something I've been thinking about a lot lately, because a lot of the calls for let's just get these guys out there, we need to get men out there, seminary education or even an education in this is a luxury we can't afford, are coming in a lot of ways and being a lot of end runs being done around an agreed upon way of making pastors or even a historic way of making pastors. And it's being done in a way that my first thought, Larry, is the whole church isn't getting a chance to weigh in on this.
Yeah, that's a nice point.
Why is it important that this is a task undertaken, if not by the whole church, by those who are chosen by the church to make those decisions?
Well, and we take very seriously the responsibility that the church has given to us. We seek to represent the church in this regard at the seminary here in Fort Wayne. Because it is such a sacred and important responsibility. It is something that the church does, and in delegating that to us, we believe that while you do have different ways of accomplishing the end, the key thing is that the church has defined the end. The Lord has given us the qualifications for a man who holds the office of the ministry, and then entrust to us the responsibility of getting the man to that end. And so, once again, we simply say that we put all of our energy into that. We're deadly serious about it because what's at stake here, of course, is the preaching of the pure gospel and the souls of people who are under the law, and we hope that they will be relieved through the proclamation of the gospel.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the history here. Where would you guide us, Larry, in terms of how the church has historically done this, how it's been done here by confessional Lutherans in America, how it's been done from the time of the Reformation?
Here in America, it's been an interesting story, as you can probably imagine I would say. There was a lot of variety early on. One of the great challenges in the early history of the various Lutheran churches here in the United States was simply getting enough pastors. And for the first, oh golly, at least 200 years of American Lutheran Church history, it was extremely uneven. We were almost totally dependent upon men who came over from Europe. And most of those men had been through a process that was regularized in the European Lutheran churches. That process was kind of fourfold, is how I usually put it forward. You had to be educated. You had to be examined by your peers. You needed to be called, and you needed to be ordained. And so, obviously, the education and examination part kind of compressed ultimately in the seminaries, but it was carried out by pastors themselves early on as they were able. But at the same time, there was a problem. And namely, the problem was you had folks who were who maybe washed out of university or seminary in Germany, who didn't have an actual degree, had been thrown out in some cases, but had come to America because it was the land of opportunity. And one of the opportunities they found was they could be preachers without actually having been formally through that fourfold process. And they would pass themselves off, and folks would say, well, we got nobody else, so this will have to do. The churches struggled mightily in those first 200 years to find a way to regularize this process, and they just didn't have the opportunity. Most of the time, it went back to a pastor working with a somewhat qualified candidate in either his local congregation or in his area. And he would help it. He would give him books to read. He would instruct him in Greek and Hebrew. They typically would require that, even Latin as well. Can you imagine working on your Latin when you're riding your horse around the woods in Pennsylvania? But they did, and they worked hard at it, and then they would be examined by their peers and then be qualified for call and ordination. But it was one-on-one. It was very inefficient.
It was kind of like the legal profession mm-hmm. at the time, when mm-hmm. a man would simply go to a lawyer and say, yeah, I want to read the law, and he'd do that, just literally read the law books, and then at some point, he'd have to pass the bar, but he would apprentice in a lot of ways.
That's a perfect analogy. Yep.
Well, let's take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk more about the past, present, and future of pastoral formation. Dr. Larry Rast is our guest, president and professor of historical theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. We are broadcasting live on this Wednesday afternoon, January the 21st, from the symposia at Concordia Theological Seminary. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc.
You can sing and recite the church's hymn book, the Psalms, using modern English and new musical settings in the new Concordia Psalter. Check it out at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase the Concordia Psalter by calling Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. Make the Concordia Psalter part of your devotional life this year. 1-800-325-3040. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January, the new Concordia Psalter.
This is Pastor Clint Pompey, Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Lincoln, Nebraska, a proud supporter of Issues Etc. Each month we host the Nebraska Lutherans for Confessional Study, a serious study of Lutheran theology. We generally meet on the fourth Thursday of each month from 9:30 to 2:30, and both clergy and laity are invited. There is no charge to attend. For more information, please call the church office or visit our website, goodshepherdlincoln.org, and click on the green NLCS tab.
Education and edification. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Hymnody is important, very important. It's an invaluable tool that helps teach and confess the faith. Singing hymns is something we all do together on a weekly basis, yet some congregations find it difficult to sing confidently without the support of an instrument. If you are one of these congregations that can't find an organist, Church Music Solutions can help. Our substitute organist service allows your hymns and liturgy to be played on your instrument to help inspire and support your congregation's song. Keep singing with Church Music Solutions.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and laypeople worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy publishes Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatics Series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up to receive their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com, lutheracademy.com, and like them on Facebook, facebook.com/Luther Academy.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. Larry Rask is our guest. We're talking about the past, present, and future of pastoral formation and training on this Wednesday afternoon, broadcasting live from the Symposia at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Now, we talked a little bit about a kind of the uneven history of Lutheranism in America when it came to pastoral formation, and it was just the way, that was that way for almost all the professions. Medicine, law, and the pastoral ministry all had this kind of, well, you're about as good as the guy who taught you. Right. And so you said the results were uneven. Let's roll back just a little bit, another couple hundred years to the time of the Reformation, where the church had been making priests through monasteries and other means, and then the reformers are kind of bereft of that whole system. What did they do in training pastors?
That's a really good question, and it's very informative for the future history of Lutheranism and what we in the Missouri Synod continue to do today. The University of Wittenberg had its theology department, and it was a theology department in a bigger university. When the Reformation got going, when the church, the Roman Catholic Church, excused itself over time from participating in recognizing the men who were prepared for ministry from Wittenberg, you kind of have emerged at Wittenberg the first Lutheran seminary for all intents and purposes. And Luther and also Melanchthon are very aware of this. They realize the game has changed right around them. And so one of the first things that they do is to revise the curriculum at the university, particularly in respect to theology, to make it more intentionally preparatory for pastoral service, so that it's not just kind of a divinity school attached to university or even a religious studies department like we would call it today. It begins to be very, very oriented towards filling the pulpits of the church, because we know now that things have played out the way they have, particularly after 1530 with the Augsburg Confession and the division in the church, that we're going to have to be the ones that prepare the future pastors.
So, in essence, they took this department at the University of Wittenberg, which was world class, by mm-hmm. the way. I mean, it was preeminent, and they turned it in some ways into a seminary.
Yeah, yeah. And one of the ways that Melanchthon does this is to, this is going to sound terrible, especially for people who know me, but he articulates a whole series of student learning outcomes. And he does this by articulating a whole series of questions. And the questions are designed to be administered to the student at the end of his study. So we're going to do the examination. We're going to figure out whether this guy is prepared for the office of the ministry or not. What does he need to know? Well, you can imagine then, if those are the questions that you're going to ask, those are then going to feed back into the curriculum, and they're going to intentionally begin to teach towards those outcomes. That's what Luther and Melanchthon do. Mm-hmm. And they're very, they didn't have the four departments like we have today. They didn't have historical, exegetical, systematic, and practical, like we tend to divvy things up. But they are, all the questions are historical, systematic, exegetical, and practical. So they're geared towards pastoral formation. And I think that's a really significant note that sometimes gets lost, because Wittenberg was a university, and the Reformation was born in the university. So therefore, it's more of an intellectual kind of movement. Well, it was certainly that. There's no question about it. But the aim, in the end, was pastoral, concern for the people of God, preparing pastors who could preach and administer the sacraments. And you see that right from the get-go.
There are also guys who have already kind of come through the system. Mm-hmm. And one of Luther and some of the other reformers' deep concerns is when they start to do congregational visitation, they find these pastors are terrible.
It's a nightmare. And they are neither good pastors, they're not pastoral in their character, and they don't know anything. Mm-hmm. So they strike out on both points. They don't know the doctrine. They can't deliver the faith to the saints because they don't know it themselves. And they're not even bothering to try and do it because they're not really pastorally concerned.
So what's their solution for that?
Their solution, again, is to create a more comprehensive character to the educational process. It's an interesting thing to note when the Reformation really breaks out, about 1521 with the three treatises and that kind of thing, there, Wittenberg takes a dive in terms of its student population. I mean, the Board of Regents would have been very upset,
yes.
Kind of thing. What in the world's going on? They tank in terms of the number of students they have, and then they start building it back up. And it's always, you know, over the next 20 years, it's kind of an ebb and flow. There's up years and down years and that kind of thing as the Reformation takes hold. But the point within all of that is that you have an emerging institution. Today we know it as the Lutheran Church, for better or for worse. And the concern is always congregationally focused. That is to say, we need to have the word, you know, the Augsburg Confession is clear. It is enough for the unity of the church that the sacraments, that the word be preached rightly and the sacraments be administered and as Christ has instituted them. Well, that's an easy thing and simple thing to say, but it's a very, very rich thing, and that's what they're working towards.
One of the other things they do, and they make it part of really some of the primary documents of the Lutheran Reformation, both the Augsburg Confession, the Apology, dealing with the issue of who is going to preach, who is going to preach and administer the sacraments. And they say it in such a coded way that we're still trying to figure out what they meant. Even 500 years later, they say, we do not permit a man to preach or administer the sacraments who is not rightly called. And whole seminary courses could probably just be taught on the debate over what those words rightly called really mean.
Right. Yeah, yeah, and have, mm-hmm. by the way, I think. But
to the best of your knowledge of these things, given all the other stuff you've talked about here, what was packed into that term rightly called?
Well, it wasn't that big a problem in a lot of ways for them, and I think that's why they could use the kind of simple language that they did. Not simplistic, but simple language. You know, we can use the jargon because we all know what the jargon means. Well, what does the jargon mean? Well, take a look at how we get the guys ready for this. Here's what we do curricularly. This is the kind of student that we want. This is the process through which we put him. He ends up at the end of that being examined as to whether or not he's sufficiently articulate in these things. He has to give evidence of a pastoral character. And once that happens, then he's ready to be called and ordained. In some ways, we make more trouble out of this thing than I think we need to. Take a look at what they did in Wittenberg and how they carried it out. And it's very much like what we continue to do today.
So I know that this kind of ebbs and flows in the course of the long Lutheran history. And we get to this point where in kind of the pioneer frontier of America, we have men showing up saying, yeah, I'm a preacher, you know, looking furtively side to side to see if anyone from Germany's around who might recognize them, and passing themselves off as preachers. And it's not just Lutherans.
No.
It is every practical confession of faith in the New World, and especially in the Western expansion. So how do we get back on track from going so far off of the track from the time of the Reformation?
Yeah, when seminaries first begin to come into existence, that's the late 1700s is when you first see seminaries as such. And part of what drives that is the uniquely American situation in which we find ourselves. Today we call it separation of church and state, however you want to put it. But the point of this is that with the universities and the close relationship between the church and the state back in Europe, you had there was government control in the end over who would be admitted or not admitted to ministry. For example, Zinzendorf keeps trying to get into the ministry, and the overseers keep turning him down. He actually goes to a different part of Germany and tries to get in through that means, and they still say, no way for you.
And these are civil authorities in some
way. These are civil authorities, mm-hmm. and he himself is something of a civil authority. He's nobility. And so what's he do? He comes to America. Why? Because you can do whatever you want in America. And so he's one of these people. Well, because there is no civil authority to enforce who enters the ministry and does not in America, synods or church bodies or denominations begin to take on that role, and the manner in which those entities carry that out is through the creation of seminaries, whether it's Catholic seminaries in the late 1700s, Andover, Newton in the early 1800s, then Princeton. Finally, the Lutherans get into the game in 1826 in a meaningful way with the formation of the Lutheran Theological Seminary at Gettysburg. And the whole point is we want to regularize this. And this is Gettysburg, where Schmucker's the professor, who's not much of a Lutheran, but he's saying we still don't want that over there.
So even the worst of kind of the pietist guy trying to rewrite the Lutheran Confession saw the need for a thoroughly trained, fully formed, and vetted ministry.
Right. He just didn't want him to be confessionally Lutheran.
Okay, so one more question with about a minute before we take our break. Our particular stream of confessional Lutheranism in America comes late to the game. I mean, Gettysburg has been there for what, at least 100 years?
No,
not 100 years. It's still underway, though, when these guys are showing up. And, of course, we can't have a part of that necessarily because you mentioned his name, Simon Schmucker's over there running the show, and we say, well, that's not kind of any kind of Lutheran we want. Do we reinvent the wheel? What do we do?
Yes and no. when we make that call, it's a really good question you raise. I oftentimes put it in synodical terms. So you also can do it in seminary terms. There were already institutions that existed when we decided to form a synod. There were plenty of synods around, Lutheran synods. There were also, when we decided to form our seminary, plenty of Lutheran seminaries around. Not only Gettysburg, 1826, but then Canton, Ohio, which becomes Columbus in the early 1830s, and down in Columbia, South Carolina, the South Carolina Synod, and more come along very, very quickly. The options are there. Why did we choose to make that move? And the move was very simply driven by our confessional stance. We were not satisfied with the confessional posture of the other existing Lutheran seminaries. What they were doing, practically speaking, the mechanics, if you will, of producing a pastor were fine, but the kind of pastor they were trying to produce was at odds with what we were about. And this was before we were a we. This was the two seminaries of the LCMS were formed before the LCMS came into existence. So it shows you just how fundamental seminary formation is to the entire process.
We'll talk more about that on the other side of the break on this Wednesday afternoon, January the 21st. We're at the Symposia at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, talking about the past, present, and future of pastoral formation with its president, Dr. Larry Rast. He's also professor of historical theology here at Concordia Theological Seminary. I'm Todd Wilkin. Stay tuned.
It is the greatest adventure you could ever possibly imagine. It's demanding, it's hard, it's challenging, and what a blessing it is.
Dr. Larry Rast, president of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, on why a man should consider the vocation of pastor.
And it is an incredible blessing to be honored with the opportunity to work with these incredible young men and older men as well, who are committing themselves to the proclamation of God's word, the right distinction of law and gospel, and to take the good news of Jesus Christ into all the world.
You can find out more about studying for the pastoral ministry at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, at ctsfw.edu or call 1-800-481-2155. Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, forming servants in Jesus Christ who teach the faithful, reach the lost, and care for all.
Seek out that clear teaching. That's why Issues, Etc. is so great.
Pastor Jonathan Fisk, host of the video blog Worldview Everlasting, on the value of Issues, Etc.
I can't speak highly enough of the times in my life, previous to seminary especially, where it was my lifeline. It was giving me the food that I needed, the clear thinking Christianity, to be able to know what I believed and why I believed it.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. Issues, Etc. issuesetc.org.
Christ at the Center, The Justification of the Ungodly, A Contemporary View of Faith and Reason, The Holy Spirit in Christ. These are just some of the almost 30 essays included in Propter Christum, Christ at the Center. It's a new book of essays in honor of Issues Etc. regular guest, Pastor Daniel Preuss. Find out more and purchase Propter Christum at shop.logia.org. Propter Christum, Christ at the Center, shop.logia.org.
Old theology, new technology. You're listening to Issues Etc.
We talk to the biggest names in religion today, liberal bishop John Shelby Spong.
I don't think Jesus ever preached the Sermon on the Mount, for example. I don't believe anybody ever took five loaves and two fish and fed 5,000 people. I don't believe that's possible to do.
Liberal Bible critic Bart Ehrman.
There's a difference between what the historical Jesus actually said and what the Gospels say he said. And to understand what the historical Jesus was really like, we have to get behind the Gospels.
Muslim critic of Christianity Reza Aslan.
By definition, the resurrection is an ahistorical event, and so therefore historians have no right, no business commenting upon it.
Where else on Christian radio will you hear these guests challenged with important questions? Talk radio for the thinking Christian, Issues Etc. Listen live or on demand at issuesetc.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're broadcasting live from the Symposium at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, India. Today and tomorrow, right now, we're talking about the past, present, and future of pastoral formation with Dr. Larry Rast, the president of Concordia Theological Seminary. You got a big day coming up tomorrow that has been years, if maybe not decades, in the making. The dedication, and it ties in beautifully with seminary training that we're talking about, the dedication of the Walther Library here on this historic campus. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, actually, we'll be changing the name of the overall complex to the Wayne and Barbara Kramer Library, reflecting the incredible generosity of Wayne and Barbara Kramer, two lay supporters of this institution who have been just remarkable in making this happen. Because we are deeply committed to our history, however, we are retaining the Walther name for the historic building, and it will be inhabited by new things. It was a 15,000 square foot building. We were coming from Springfield back in the mid-70s from a building in which we had 30,000 square feet. So we were already compressing our collection from 30 to 15,000 in terms of the active collection when we made that move. And for years and years and years and years and years have been looking for ways to appropriately expand our library, and also to make it a resource for the church here in the United States, Fort Wayne area, the United States, but also then in our partner churches throughout the world. And I think we've accomplished that. We're really blessed to have an incredible team, an amazing group of people who've come together to make this happen. But I turn back again and again to people like Wayne and Barbara, lay people who love the church, who love this seminary, who are committed to us to continue to train pastors here residentially. You know, we know about distance education. We're involved in that as well, but we remain deeply committed to the superiority of a long-term residential experience. Wayne and Barbara recognize that too and have been so generous in that regard. There are other folks. Dennis and Ann Ross are helping us with the archives. David and Paula Daniels have been unbelievable in terms of bringing the woodwork to the whole place. Paul Wolf, a person here in the Fort Wayne area, has also just been an incredibly generous donor. So, and all of these folks are lay people, and they're doing this because they love their pastors, and they know just how important it is to have a well-trained, well-educated, well-formed, deeply thoughtful, good law gospel distinguishing Lutheran pastor. So we're really, really excited about this.
And they want to ensure that for future generations.
Exactly.
They want to see, I always think, when I think about the guys who are studying here, studying at other seminary, my great-grandkid's pastor.
Right.
That's my great-grandchild's pastor right there. That's the person who's probably going to bury me or my kids. it's not this generation only, it's the next generation to come.
Exactly. That's passing along the faith. The faith once delivered, we continue to deliver.
So you mentioned before that the two seminaries of our particular church body, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, actually predate the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod itself. And you said that speaks to how high a priority it was for the people who would form that synod to the formation of pastors. They didn't say, well, first let's form a synod, then let's get some seminaries going. It was the other way around. Talk a bit about that.
Yeah, these immigrants come in, and they start flooding in huge numbers. In 1835 especially, the floodgates open up and folks start pouring in. And the numbers in which they come is simply astounding. And as they push into the American countryside, onto the frontier, they're especially drawn to places like northern Ohio, Indiana, southern Michigan, Illinois, Wisconsin, to a lesser extent Missouri, Iowa, and so on and so on. And as they get into these places, one of two things is the case. Either the Lutheran churches that are there, or the pastors that are itinerating, that is, kind of riding the circuit, you might say, are the Lutheran pastors are not very Lutheran. They've studied at Gettysburg. They just don't have a confessional character or commitment.
They're Methodists.
They're Methodists. Yeah, yeah. They're almost indistinguishable from them. Or the other option are the German Methodists, who are all over the place, too, getting to these folks. And in some cases, the Lutherans back east just kind of let the Methodists do their things and say, well, they're there, we'll let them handle it. So there's a paucity of pastors and congregations. And as these folks come in, they not only don't have pastors now or congregations now, they're not organized even at that level, they realize that what that means is they're not going to have congregations and pastors into the future. So as they get organized, they quickly begin to pull their resources together and to very intentionally begin the process of training men for service in the church. The group that lands in St. Louis and then Perry County, Missouri in 1839 does that right away. They start the what's now Concordia Seminary, St. Louis, in December of 1839. It's a college. It's a log cabin school initially, but it grows over time into a seminary. In our case, Friedrich Winneken, the great missionary of the Northwest, which back then meant Indiana and Michigan, but
the Midwest.
Now
yes.
The Midwest. Yes. Friedrich Winneken began training as a mentor students in his parsonage already in 1844, but then handed the job over to Wilhelm Seeler, who became pastor here in Fort Wayne at St. Paul's Church in 1845, and with the intention of starting a seminary. And so in October 1846, we began our operations here. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod wasn't formed until April 26, 1847. So both seminaries, again, predate the existence of the Synod.
And this would have been humble beginnings. They weren't founding big libraries.
No.
They did not have beautiful soaring chapels. They were doing what they could with what they had, but they were serious about it.
They were very serious about it. The college down in Perry County, Missouri, was a log cabin, and it really was a log cabin.
About as big as the table we're sitting at.
About as big as really tiny. Up here, the seminary began operations in the pastor's parsonage. And Pastor Wilhelm Seeler, remarkable guy, longtime bachelor, married shortly before the seminary began its operations. How old was he? He was about 43, 44 when he got married. His wife was 16. And then she became the house mother for these seminary students. So she has to take care of these 11 new students that begin their studies in the fall of 1846. It is very humble. It's very challenging. Who comes to the rescue? Well, not only Pastor Seeler and his wife Susanna, but also then the people of Fort Wayne. The Lutheran people of Fort Wayne take care of these students. They make sure that they have places to stay, places to eat, that they have something to eat. It's a remarkable story of how, again, deeply committed these folks are to having pastors that, and men that they know in most cases will not be serving them, but that they're going to be sending out to serve others. And for the sake of these brothers and sisters in the faith, they are willing to work like you wouldn't believe.
Now, in terms of the study and the training and the formation, did they turn the page back to the Reformation and say, what were the Reformers doing? Let's, to the best of our ability, try and recreate this method of forming pastors.
Yes and no. They were cognizant of the circumstances of the American frontier, which made a full training process rather difficult. At the same time, they wanted to ensure that every student who completed his studies was biblically literate, confessionally sound, and given to taking that truth out into the world in a very vigorous way. So, short answer, first off, is yes. They knew what the Reformation did, and they were determined to continue that within, yet at the same time, within the context in which they found themselves. Initially, that meant a relatively truncated period of study. The men who studied here at the Fort Wayne Seminary back then were oftentimes what we would today call second career guys. They hadn't been through the German university. They didn't have Greek and Latin and Hebrew and that kind of thing. So immediately we had to ask ourselves, are we going to force them to learn these things? Well, in the end, we made a judgment call. We didn't force them to learn Hebrew. We did make them learn Greek. We also made them work in Latin. So no Hebrew, but Latin. Figure that one out. However, the students regularly would ask the professors to provide them Hebrew. So they would stay longer than they had to so they could learn Hebrew. So there's that aspect to it. So the language part was there. But the question that was always pressing, and the one that I think is still an important one for us to consider today, is, okay, so if you have a limited amount of time, what is it that you need to do so that you can have this well-formed, apt-to-teach pastoral candidate? And as time went on, the curriculum continually expanded. Some folks think, well, that came when you got a little more institutionalized and you were a little more, you know, the bigger schools, you know, bigger buildings and a little more comfortable financially speaking. Didn't. The Synod did that very, very early on and said, we expect at least 3 years of education for our students before they go out. Well, today we have 3 years and a vicarage. So it's what we were doing from very early on is still pretty much the pattern we follow today.
So from that point, to kind of summarize it up to this point, from that point then, while the buildings have gotten bigger, the locations may have changed, the names have certainly changed, the actual way of thinking about how a man is properly and sufficiently trained to stand in the pulpit at the altar has not changed a lot at all.
That's right.
Dr. Larry Rast is our guest. When we come back, we got 10 more minutes with him. We're going to talk a little bit about the future of pastoral formation. And that is a story as yet unwritten, and a lot of people trying to grab the pen and write it for the future. They got a lot of bright ideas about what the future of pastoral formation should look like. We'll talk with Dr. Larry Rast about it right after this.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. St. Mark Lutheran, Edmond, Oklahoma. Emmanuel Lutheran, Manchester, New Hampshire. University Lutheran Chapel, Minneapolis, Minnesota. Prince of Peace Lutheran, Freedom, Pennsylvania. Holy Cross Lutheran, O'Fallon, Missouri. St. Paul Lutheran, Indianapolis, Indiana. Christ Lutheran, Rochester, Minnesota. Holy Cross Lutheran, Carlisle, Iowa. St. Peter's Lutheran, Indianapolis, Indiana, and Grace Lutheran, Wellsville, Missouri. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300.
The radio voice of the Lutheran faith for the 21st century. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Christianity once turned the world upside down. Is it still true? Join us for the Village Lutheran Lectures on Christianity and Culture on February the 7th, 2 to 4 p.m., as Dr. Alvin Schmidt reminds us of the Church's rich heritage of turning the world upside down and invites us to continue that very thing today. Join us at Village Lutheran Church, 9237 Clayton Road in suburban St. Louis.
Oh, morning star, oh, morning star, shine with her on bridal twilight.
Listen to the best of the church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Epiphany season, 24/7. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about training of pastors, the past, present, and future of it, with President and Professor of Historical Theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, Dr. Larry Rast, a regular guest here on Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Before we go on, just make the pitch, if you would, because there are people listening, and I mentioned to you that we've met many people over the course of the years, and probably at least half a dozen young men here today in just short conversations who have come up to us and said, essentially, you know, with regard to Issues Etc., I'm only here at Fort Wayne because of you guys. I listen to your show. I overstate it, but it's quite true that that a lot of times they hear something and they say, this is for me. I've known many men who will say, I heard you talk about this and I realized I want to do this, or I don't want to do it, but I think I kind of have to do it. Why should someone who's sitting there at that point of decision, either by listening to us or any other means, why should they seriously consider following through?
Well, first of all, it's simply due to the fact that it's the Lord's work. It's the Lord's calling, and to be part of it, there's nothing like it in the world. It's the greatest thing you could ever be a part of. It's challenging. It's exciting. It's depressing. It's everything, every emotion you can throw together. But it is never, ever dull. That is for sure. These Issues Lutherans, as I've come to call them, that you're talking about here, are really an important part of our community. These are folks that have learned about confessional Lutheranism. Maybe they were Lutheran born and didn't really get the picture and have picked it up as time has gone by, or folks that weren't part of the Lutheran tradition at all who've found their way in via Issues Etc. And that has they contribute to the life of this campus in an enormously important way and a recognizable way. They come and why people should come here is that you come together with folks of like mind in that regard, and it gives you the opportunity to learn more deeply, to explore the richness of our confession, to delve more so into the scriptures than with wonderful scholars and pastors who are experts in this area than you've ever been able to do before, and you do it all together every day, and then you top it all off with gathering around the Word of God in chapel with some of the best liturgy, music, unquestionably, and preaching that you can find. It just, golly,
it's great.
I'm kind of glad I'm here.
Well, and I have to tell you that one of your students who's getting ready to head out, who's finished his fourth year, is one of my parishioners, Brett Simic, and he comes back, he preaches, he does the liturgy for us. And it is amazing how quickly those 4 years fly for us sitting there waiting for him to come out, and how I'm sure it hasn't flown for him necessarily. But to watch him go from college student who was thinking seriously about being a pastor to on the edge of being a pastor, it's unbelievable to watch that happen. Right. And you guys have, done a great job training him. Folks, if you've ever considered the vocation of pastor or deaconess, they also make those here too. Contact Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, 1-800-481-2155, or visit them on the web, ctsfw.edu. The future is the big issue of debate, especially among us confessional Lutherans. What do we do? We turn to that question of, maybe what we've been doing so far for 150 years, while it works great, is a luxury we can't afford, time and money that we can't afford in a dying world. What are your thoughts there?
We can't afford not to put our efforts into pastoral formation and diaconal formation. our world isn't getting less complex, it's getting more complex. The fragmentation of assumptions about what the United States is, about the role of Christianity, what Christianity actually is, those aren't becoming less problematic or less complex issues. They're becoming more difficult issues. And so what we are doing, you know, if I had a magic wand and I could make happen whatever I wanted to happen, it wouldn't be to shorten seminary experience. It would be to lengthen, to make it affordable, to make it accessible to everybody who wanted to be a part of it, so that they could find their gifts and their vocation within the context of a place like this. But the reason for that is not simply institutional longevity or survival. Who cares? You know, the institutions come and go. We can, you know, that's what happens. Just a couple of days ago, I was standing in the Hagia Sophia in Istanbul. And you want to talk about a whole range of emotions going through a person that you're overwhelmed by the enormity of the thing, and it's simply magnificent. But at the same time, you see that was the seat of empire. It was the church of the Eastern Roman Empire, and it collapsed in 1453. Things change. Well, so we're not here simply to maintain the institution for its own sake. We're here, and we continue to do what we do because we are convinced that what we do has eternal significance. It is, and the way in which we do it, while it can always be improved, does achieve the ends for that we have set for ourselves and that the Synod has given us. And you've seen it with Brett. Great mm-hmm. kid. And I can't tell you what a joy it is to watch a person grow. Like
I don't see how you do it. I don't see how you do it with all these guys coming through that just pass through the turnstile, and every year you send out another crop of them, and you say, this is only by God's grace that we're able to do this.
It's purely by God's grace, but it's grace worked out within a community. And we have a great faculty. We have an unbelievably gifted and committed faculty. And we have, well, staff as well, and the administration's okay. The president's a little shaky. But but we also have, above all, an outstanding student body. And they teach one another, and they teach us as professors as well. It's a community of learning. It's a marvelous place to be.
I have to ask you, you know, with about a minute, you said we're aware of distance learning. People have said, now with the advent of the internet, why do I need to be anywhere to do anything, much less seminary education? You said before you were committed to a long-term, thorough, residential way of training pastors. Why does being together in one place for some time, and especially, as you mentioned before, worshiping together as a student body and as future pastors, why is that so very important?
You've just said it yourself. In the end, it has. There's a character to the experience that you simply cannot achieve by virtue of cyber relationships. And again, I'm not downplaying the importance of those. They're wonderful deliverables that can happen by distance learning and the like. But the key to what happens here is that in the end, it is incarnational. Our Lord Himself came into this world. He taught his servants. He brought them together. They walked together. They learned from him. They were absolutely clueless a lot of times. So as we continue to carry out our work in that train, the train of the apostles, we do so very intentionally, knowing that at the center of everything is Christ. And Christ gathers together for himself a people, which is the church. And the church has given to us this marvelous opportunity, responsibility, but better yet, opportunity, of delving into the Word of God, of learning the Lutheran confessions, of learning the story of the church, and applying all of this pastorally in the end. And doing that together just can't be replicated by any other means.
Dr. Larry Rast is president and professor of historical theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Larry, thank you very much. It's always a pleasure, and thanks for making the good case for the future of the training of and the formation of pastors.
Thanks, Todd. Happy to talk about this anytime.
Folks, we're going to be broadcasting again tomorrow from the Symposia at Concordia Theological Seminary here in Fort Wayne. We're going to discuss infant communion tomorrow with Professor John Pless. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January is called the Concordia Psalter. It's a brand new resource. It's new, But it's also very old because it's nothing but a book of the Psalms from the Old Testament with devotional material. You can find out about this great study and devotional resource called the Concordia Psalter at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand, or you can give Concordia Publishing House a call and order one for yourself. You will not regret it. 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040. Pastors are a gift to the church, and the church a gift to pastors. And as much as we value the gospel, then we value and the continued preaching of that gospel in all of its purity, the administration of the sacraments, so much we will value those men who bring it to us by God's call, but also so much will we value the church's opportunity and privilege of training them, of forming them, of giving them what they need in order to pass it along to God's people. If we love the future of the church, as I said before, your kids and your grandkids, you want them to have the very best pastor that they can have. I'm Todd Wilkin. Good night from Fort Wayne. I'll talk with you tomorrow.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
South Africa,
China,
Germany,
Trinidad and Tobago.
Did you know that people listen to Issues Etc. around the world?
India,
Sweden,
Egypt,
France,
Turkey,
Japan,
Australia,
Canada,
United Kingdom,
Hong Kong,
Austria,
Finland,
Malaysia,
Singapore,
Bulgaria,
Korea,
Brazil.
You can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by making a secure online donation at issuesetc.org. You can also donate by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Help us proclaim Christ to the world.
The Philippines,
Mexico,
Spain,
New Zealand,
Kuwait,